So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that Sam is gonna get you some in the end.
When I asked Damon to pick up some Mexican takeout, I meant tacos or tortas. Not another episode of Agave Road Trip. But since it's here, let's roll.
Look, Chava, a check from La Luna Mezcal de Michoacan.
Wow, Lou, what are we going to do with that?
We're going to strap ourselves in for another episode of Agave Road Trip brought to you by La Luna Mezcal de Michoacan.
I am Lou Bank.
I am Salvador Peribán, better called Chava.
And this is Agave Road Trip. On today's Agave Road Trip, we're going to talk about distillation.
Yes, probably the part where we have, well, I have more experience.
Oh, I've got, well, actually, that's not true. I started a distillery. What am I thinking?
You do have experience with that.
I got a little experience with it. And it's sort of actually what amazed me. It's the thing that opened my eyes to something different going on when I visited Oaxaca the second time. It was the first time, the second time I visited in 2009 was the first time I visited a Palenque.
And what was it? What was about distillation that caught your eye?
Well, okay, so I thought all distillation took place in one of these giant pot stills or something even more industrial. Right?
Like the ones you were working with at the distillery.
Yeah, when I set up the distillery at Rogue Ales in Oregon back in 2002, I thought we were working with really old equipment because it was this, right, it was this copper still that I'm pretty sure was gas heated. It certainly wasn't wood heated. It might have been electric. I honestly don't remember. But then I walked into Lalo's Palenque, Eduardo Anales' Palenque in Santa Catarina Minas, and I'm looking at what I thought could be described as a brick oven for pizza with a chimenea, a backyard chimenea dropped into the middle of it. And I was like, how the hell did this guy come up with that system for distillation?
It is definitely an extravagant look. And a lot of people have traced this back to Korean, Mongolian, Filipinos. Like,
it makes you want to travel beyond Mexico.
It does. It does. It definitely tells you that people have been distilling stuff for a long time. Alcohol is a nice thing to have around, Lou.
Yeah. So, okay. Alcohol is a nice thing to have around. And you can, well, what we talked about last podcast episode was fermenting, where we made the alcohol. And then distillation is, in essence, the concentration of that alcohol.
Yeah. Like, I think, you know, some people that prefer to drink beer. Mm-hmm. But some people like something a little bit stronger, right?
Like whiskey, which is like beer without the hops.
Exactly. Yeah. And therefore, that's why I think our fellow antique like ancestors decided to come up with a technology that would allow them to separate water from alcohol. Therefore, going for the 4 ABV typical in beers and all the fermented other stuff.
So 4% alcohol by volume.
Exactly.
To something more like 40% alcohol by volume.
Or 55 if we're lucky.
Or 75.
If
we're
like
crazy.
Puntas.
We'll get into that later. Okay, so how do you separate, how do you distill, how do you separate the water from the alcohol to churn it from a 4% alcohol by volume to a 40%?
It's actually a very simple process. Just basically certain types of alcohols like ethanol, methanol, and other types have a different evaporation temperature.
A boiling point.
A boiling point. Thank you very much for correcting my Spanglish. then water. So basically you are heating a vessel that has water and alcohol and getting to that point where you're evaporating alcohol and not water. And
then in a nutshell, there's still going to be some water in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's not 100% ethanol.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, and in Mexico, I think the other really interesting thing is they use many types of different vessels. They use the clay one you described. They use copper. They use stainless steel. They use sometimes even wood parts to the alembic. It's just like they're very, very interesting types of equipment that they get down there.
Huh. And why would they use different ones?
Well, you know, I think sometimes practicity, sometimes flavor, but I think we have a really nice quote that will sort of tell us or give us more information about this.
Is this from Jesus Franco?
Yes, it is. From our last trip to La Mixteca Alta in Buena Vista.
That was November of 2019. Let's roll the tape.
Mi nombre es Jesús Franco Cruz.
I'm 32 years old, and I am a mezcal producer. Here, the municipio has four agencias. Where we are right now is called Buena Vista Teosocalco. The other three agencias are called San José Río Minas, San Antonio El Progreso, and San Isidro Teosocalco. And all of us, obviously including the municipio, are mezcal producers. Recently, we have shifted from clay pots to stainless steel pots, even if we preserve the clay condenser, because steel is not as fragile as clay, which you can easily break with a piece of lumber or anything else. We've done a couple batches using this new equipment, and we've realized that it helps us work faster and gives us better agave yields.
Okay, so thanks for that quote, Jesus. Now, Chava, why would he do that, right? We talk a lot about the importance of the appeal of these traditional methods. And changing from clay to steel, you're getting more industrial. So what's he doing? What's Jesus doing?
Well, you have to consider he's living in the middle of nowhere. How long did it took us to get here or there?
Oh, my goodness. My recollection is that was almost a day's drive, like 8 hours.
Was it a pleasant drive? I mean, the landscapes were beautiful, but it was not a pleasant drive.
Parts of it were pleasant. Going into the town where it was illegal to have alcohol, that wasn't so pleasant. There was a little fear.
We almost got put into jail.
There's that.
We're not very good friends with the Christian authorities that approached us, but they let us go.
Right.
Cheers
but,
to them.
You know, but to your point, like there's also this beauty to, besides adhering to tradition, to also just using what you have, what's at hand and what's available. If he wants to replace his clay still, like if it... And the clay still, too, can break so easily and unexpectedly.
It can explode. You build too much pressure. Well, it won't explode, but you build too much pressure in that, and you'll shoot up the top of it.
And you'll lose everything that was in it.
And the steel itself.
And the steel itself. And so it's going to take you at least a day to replace that steel. At least a day, which means you're stopping all your operations.
So I think, you know, some things for others. And to his credit, his juice is amazing.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, you know, sometimes tradition, sometimes practicity, each one to their own, as long as they are doing a quality product, I think.
Okay, I like that. So there you go. There's distillation in a nutshell. And since we're already talking about the clay pots, why don't we cover on our other singular objective, ceramics and clay in Mexico.
Oaxaca is probably the place that has the highest diversity of clay making in all Mexico and probably all Latin America.
Yeah.
It's calculated that more than 200 towns had some type of specific access to clay, be it different types of dirt, different ways to process it, different, not glazes. There's only one community that uses glazes, but there's a lot of diversity in clay.
You know, I get so frustrated looking at the ceramics down in, specifically in Oaxaca. And my frustration is I end up in San Bartolo Coyotepec and I see these black pots, like they're thick and they're awkward and the black looks like paint to me. And I hear all about these heritage ceramics, but I honestly, the methods, I've only seen what I consider heritage ceramics, either old stuff being sold on the roadside in Oaxaca, and you can find some beautiful 50-year-old pots there. For next to nothing, or my friends in Wisconsin. I've got a friend, David Smith, in Wisconsin, right, who built his own kiln, wood-fired kiln. I'm frustrated. How do I see the good stuff in Mexico?
Well, you have to go knock on some doors. I have this really good friend there, Rufina Ruiz López, from Atzompa, Santa Maria Atzompa. The things she's doing are amazing.
Yeah.
And it's new stuff, but with all the heritage, with all that nice influence that makes you wonder where does this come from? But it's harder. I get your point, because sometimes you go into like these fancy design stores. I mean, I started working in Oaxaca in ceramics.
Yeah.
And it took me a while. Yeah. Like that's the whole reason why I started living in Oaxaca. And it took me a while to A, understand where to find it, B, to look at them and understand what was the good stuff versus the bad stuff, and C, to know the families. You need to know the families that are really good at making it.
Okay, interesting. So I'm actually headed back down to Oaxaca in a week and a half. So maybe I can stop in at your friend's. Zompa's just like, what, 20 minutes north
of
the
these days it's almost a suburb of Oaxaca. Yeah, it's like 20 minutes on the Etla direction.
Okay, cool. So that's that'll cover it for Clay and our other singular objective. So let's wrap up this episode with another segment of Mexico Like a Pro, our pro tips, and talk about Palenque tours. If I'm headed down to Oaxaca and I am not comfortable renting a car and driving off on my own with some GPS coordinates, what are my options?
Well, there's plenty of, I think, very decent Palenque tours. I myself have not taken a lot of them because I lived there for almost 8 years. So let's say I have privileged access to the surroundings. But a lot of people that I know, they're just going to spend there a week, few days. They don't have all the time to making their research to us, to other people. So I think a Palenque tour is not a bad idea.
Huh. So when we're saying Palenque too, like it suggests distillery, but there's also, if you drive towards Santiago Matatlan, the fabricados, how do you say it?
What's that?
Factories. How do you say?
Fabricas.
Fabricas. You see fabrica. And whenever I see fabrica, I always assume it's somebody who's not doing things entirely in a traditional way.
Or with quality or with care.
But, you know, you walk up and down the streets of Oaxaca and people will literally stop you and offer to take you to these places. And in my experience, that's not the way to do a tour, that you'll end up at the more commercial places.
Do you know anyone you like? Do you have any tours that you prefer than others?
You know, it's funny. I don't know that I can honestly say that there are tours that I prefer because I've never taken a tour. I've always just gone with friends to places. But I have friends who give tours. And there are a lot of them. I don't want to try to run through them and then forget some of the names while we're recording. You know how I am with that.
Yeah. Your memory, it's a famous piece of equipment.
Yeah. But what I will do is on the website, we can post the contact information for a bunch of different tour companies who I believe will bring you to good places and charge you a fair fee.
And I think the biggest advantage of this is that this happened to you various times and to me. So many times you call the palenquero, you make all the arrangements, you say, yes, you're sure you're going to be there? They say, yes, I ride the car for 4 hours, you knock the door, there's no one there.
Yeah, I get that. But honestly, I've never been disappointed. Even in the cases where somebody's not there, their neighbor is. Somebody else is in that community making great spirits. And it's sometimes how I end up meeting other palenqueros, other mescaleros.
I just hope you're not sneaking in their houses and stealing their mezcal.
I would always leave money. I'd never steal it.
Okay. Say that.
Yeah. So we'll also add, in case you're more adventurous, we'll add to the website directions for how you can go and visit on your own if you want to rent a car.
Sure.
Okay. So that's going to wrap it up for today. And when we come back on the next podcast, which we'll actually record tomorrow, not today, we'll talk about barrel aging.
Oof.
Hasta pronto.
Hasta luego.
What you just heard was Agave Road Trip. And you can keep hearing Agave Road Trip for the first 8 episodes on the Speakeasy. But what are they going to do after that, Chava?
They'll have to come and hunt us down at agaveroadtrip.com or subscribe wherever they listen to their podcast for our magnificent upcoming season 2. Agave Road Trip is brought to you by La Luna Mezcal de Michoacán. Take it over, Lou.
So I gotta say, like, it's hard for me to accept a check from a brand of mezcal, and I wouldn't do it from just any brand, but I really like everything that La Luna Mezcal produces. So in particular, I am so taken with their tequilana. It feels to me like this is the missing link between tequila and mezcal. It's a certified mezcal made in Michoacan, but it's made in a traditional method, the same way that all of these beautiful mezcals are made. So they've taken this process that has basically disappeared from Jalisco, from the tequila region, and they've brought this heritage back, and they've brought it back in this bottle that I think anybody who's a fan of tequila is going to want to try. Thanks very much, La Luna, for supporting us, and catch you next road trip.
Many thanks to Lou Bank and Chava Perriban for bringing us this special presentation of Agave Road Trip on the Speakeasy.
You can listen to all of Season 1 right now. Agave Road Trip is available on heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you get your podcasts. The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.